save him, or to reach me with the news that I'm without a mount to ride. My saddle horse has died. My saddle horse has died. No one can provide the slightest little reason to encourage me to go on with this life. My saddle horse has died. My saddle horse has died. And with him goes my pride. Without a charging steed beneath me, I can hardly call myself a knight. My saddle horse has died. My saddle horse has died. And I am sick inside. Thoughts of armies infidel attacking while I cannot join the fight. My saddle horse has died. Saddle horse has died, and I am sick inside. The thoughts, the even victories unfolding while I cannot join the fight. We'll be right back.
Good evening, radio fans. Welcome to Transition State. I'm your host, as always, Adam Smiley. This is the show dedicated to raising pharmaceutical awareness in the community, and also the show dedicated to raising good-ass music in the community. So what did we just hear? That last song was Congo Rock, track title Sirius, as in the Dog Star. Before that, Cold Warps with their hit Cough Drops. Before that, The Smalls, My Saddle Horse Has Died, which was wicked. And before that, obviously, which was wicked, Fluxus. The song was Agent Tangent. So if that wasn't good enough for you, then no problem. We got better and more coming up. This week, I'll be reading from the Annals of Internal Medicine. I have a trial before me. The postmenopausal hormone therapy increases risk for venous thromboembolic disease. Thromboembolic. Basically, the Heart and Estrogen Progestin Replacement Study, or HERS. So stay tuned for that. But first, let's hear an ad.
A pioneer of extreme accordion, Portland's Miss Murgatroyd delivers her first solo performance in 10 years at the closing night of the 2014 Accordion Noir Festival. Don't miss Miss Murgatroyd with Sick Boss, Elliot Vaughn, and Elise Cheadle on Sunday, September 14th at the Orpheum Annex. Co-presented by Accordion Noir and Vancouver New Music.
Through a vein at the break of reason.
Back. That was the Phonemes with April, Let's Send His Colleagues an Email. And wasn't it sweet? Before that, we heard Hooded Fang with Highway Steam. Venous thromboembolism, including thrombosis of the deep veins of the legs and embolism to the pulmonary arteries, is a serious and potentially fatal event. Venous thromboembolism is uncommon in the general population, occurring in about 1 to 4 per 1,000 adults annually. However, the risk is increased in persons with previous venous thromboembolism, recent surgical procedures, immobilization, fracture of a lower extremity, cancer, and inherited coagulation disorders. Use of oral contraceptive pills increases risks for venous thromboembolism. This increased risk is thought to be due to estrogen and to be dose-related. The biological potency of the estrogens generally used in postmenopausal hormone therapy is about 1/4 to 1/5 that of the estrogens in modern oral contraceptives. Until recently, there has been little evidence that low-dose estrogen therapy is associated with increased risk for venous thromboembolism. Recent observational studies have suggested that postmenopausal hormone therapy causes a 2-fold to 4-fold increase in risk for idiopathic deep venous thrombosis and pulmonary embolism. However, these findings may be biased if women taking estrogen are more likely to be evaluated for non-specific symptoms suggestive of venous thromboembolism. The Heart and Estrogen Progestin Replacement Study was a randomized, blinded, placebo-controlled trial of the effect of daily conjugated equine estrogen 0.625 mg plus medroxyprogesterone acetate 2.5 mg on the rate of new coronary events in 2,763 postmenopausal women with established coronary heart disease. One of the specified secondary outcomes of this trial was venous thromboembolism. An increased risk for venous thromboembolism among women assigned to hormone therapy was noted by the HERS Data and Safety Monitoring Board. The board instructed the HERS investigators to inform participants and the scientific community of this risk and to institute measures to reduce risk. At a mean follow-up of 3.3 years, the HERS investigators notified participants to discontinue study medication in situations associated with increased risks for venous thromboembolism, such as surgery, hospitalization, fracture, and cancer, and publish a letter noting the increased risk. This report presents the full analysis of the findings.
Listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam speaking Musqueam people.
And we're back. That was the Mittens with their hit Pointillist Pilot. Before that, we heard from Anya Marina, Body Knows Best. Participants in HERS were postmenopausal women younger than 80 years of age who had coronary disease, myocardial infarction, coronary artery bypass surgery, percutaneous coronary revascularization, or angiographic evidence of at least 50% narrowing of one or more major coronary arteries, and had not had a hysterectomy. Women were excluded if their coronary event occurred within 6 months of randomization. They had used hormone therapy within 3 months of randomization. They had a history or baseline findings suggestive of venous thromboembolism, breast cancer, or endometrial cancer, or they had uncontrolled hypertension, diabetes, or other life-threatening diseases. The protocol was approved by the Institutional Review Board at each of the 20 HERS clinical centers, and all participants provided written, informed consent. Participants were randomly assigned to take one tablet daily of conjugated equine estrogen, 0.625 milligrams, plus medroxyprogesterone acetate, 2.5 milligrams, or placebo, that was identical in appearance. Randomization was stratified by clinical center and performed in blocks of four. To prevent unblinding of clinical center staff, HERS participants reported breast discomfort and vaginal bleeding directly to gynecology staff, who were located separately from the clinical center staff, did not communicate with clinical center personnel about breast or gynecologic problems, and did not participate in ascertainment of outcomes. Follow-up visits to the clinical centers occurred at four-month intervals. Coronary events, non-fatal myocardial infarction, and coronary death were primary outcome of the trial. At each visit, clinical staff asked participants if they had been told by a physician that they had a blood clot in the legs or lungs. Women were also asked whether they had been hospitalized, and records were reviewed to determine whether venous thromboembolism had occurred. Women were not routinely asked about symptoms of venothrombosis, such as lower extremity edema. Diagnosis of deep venous thrombosis required documentation of thrombosis of the popliteal or more proximal veins of the legs by venography, impedance plethysmography, or sonography. Pulmonary embolism required documentation by a nuclear lung scan that suggested a high probability of pulmonary embolism, segmental or larger perfusion defect with ventilation mismatch, or by pulmonary angiography that revealed a constant intraluminal filling defect on multiple films. Suspected venous thromboembolism was adjudicated independently and without knowledge of treatment assignment by two physicians at the HERS Coordinating Center located at the University of California, San Francisco. Disagreements were resolved by consensus. Persons who analyzed data were also blinded to participants' treatment status. Data were collected on events that occurred during the trial that might be predictors of venous thromboembolism, including fractures, non-fatal myocardial infarction, congestive heart failure, stroke, and transient ischemic attack. Venous thromboembolism was classified as idiopathic in women who did not have concomitant cancer, non-fatal myocardial infarction, congestive heart failure, or stroke and did not have a fracture, inpatient surgery, or hospitalization in the 3 months before the venous thromboembolic event. In the primary analysis, an unadjusted Cox proportional hazards model for time to first event was used to compare the rate of venous thromboembolism among women assigned to hormone therapy with the rate among women assigned to placebo. The primary analysis was intention to treat. Participants were categorized according to treatments, assignment regardless of compliance. Participants who were lost to follow-up, 33 women in the hormone therapy group and 36 in the placebo group, were censored at the last date at which they were known to be alive, without venous thromboembolism. Vital status was known for all women at the end of the trial. We also performed an as-treated analysis, in which inclusion in the risk sets was limited to women in both treatment groups whose average compliance with therapy during the trial, measured by pill count, was at least 80%. Relative hazards were also estimated by year. Since randomization, women with events in earlier years were censored. And continuous trend in the long relative hazard was examined in a companion model. We repeated the main analyses separately for idiopathic and non-idiopathic venous thromboembolism. Potential risk factors for venous thromboembolism were first examined by using univariate proportional hazards models adjusted for treatment assignment. In these models, post-randomization events and medication use were represented by time-dependent indicators, which reverted to zero 90 days after fracture, surgery, or hospitalization, or when therapy was discontinued. Variables associated with venous thromboembolism, for which the associated p-value was less than 0.2 in univariate analyses, were considered for inclusion in multivariate models and retained in the model if the p-value remained less than 0.2. Statistical analyses were performed by using SAS software version 6.12, SAS Institute, Inc., Cary, North Carolina.
Thank you.
You not sure where to go on campus? Traveling late at night and afraid to go alone? Call SafeWalk, a free service where a co-ed team will take you anywhere you need to go on campus. Don't walk alone. For a walk, add SafeWalk to your phone. Call 604-822-5355. That's 604-822-5355. Alternatively, use a UBC Blue phone and ask for SafeWalk. Approach any SafeWalk team or drop by our office on the main floor of the sub across from the gallery lounge. Because you're mine, I walk the line.
HERS is the first large randomized trial to examine the effect of postmenopausal hormone therapy on risk for venous thromboembolism. Treatment was blinded, and venous thromboembolic events were documented by accepted diagnostic tests. Women assigned to hormone therapy had a threefold increase in risk for thromboembolic events compared with those assigned to placebo. Although the number of events was small, the relative risk seemed to be similar for both idiopathic and non-idiopathic venous thromboembolism. That is, among women with and those without other risk factors for venous thromboembolism. The findings of HERS are consistent with those of five recent observational studies that reported a twofold to fourfold increased risk for idiopathic venous thromboembolism in postmenopausal women taking oral estrogen or estrogen plus progestin compared with non-users. All five studies included only women without known risk factors for venous thromboembolism, and the outcome was limited to idiopathic thromboembolic events. Women with a history of venous thromboembolism were excluded from HERS, but HERS participants were older than women in the observational studies, and all had coronary heart disease. In addition, both idiopathic and non-idiopathic thromboembolic events were included in the outcome in HERS. Although the relative hazards from the observational studies and the HERS trial are similar, these differences in the populations studied and the definition of outcome resulted in a rate of thromboembolism among HERS participants, 2.3 per 1,000, that was tenfold higher than the rates in the observational studies. The results of observational studies may have exaggerated the risk for venous thrombosis due to hormone use if physicians have a higher suspicion of thrombosis among hormone therapy users. This potential bias should have been eliminated in HERS to the extent that blinding was successful. Given the design of the trial, we cannot determine whether the increased risk for venous thromboembolism observed in HERS participants taking oral hormone therapy was due to the estrogen component, the progestin component, or both. However, in observational studies, risk for venous thromboembolism was increased similarly in women using unopposed estrogen and in those using estrogen plus a progestin. On the basis of these findings and evidence from studies of oral contraceptive pills, the estrogen component of hormone therapy is most likely responsible for the observed increased risk. Other estrogen-like drugs, including tamoxifen and raloxifene, have also been shown in randomized trials to increase risk for venous thromboembolism. Oral estrogen therapy is associated with high hormone concentrations in the liver. This first-pass effect may alter hepatic production or metabolism of coagulation factors, but no clear mechanism has been identified. Compared with non-users, women who take postmenopausal estrogen have higher serum levels of factor VII and protein C, differences that could be thrombogenic. Although the number of pulmonary emboli that occurred during the trial was small, the relative hazard seemed to decrease over time. The increased risk for pulmonary embolism in the first 1 to 2 years of treatment, followed by a decrease in risk, is similar to the pattern seen for the primary outcome of HERS, coronary heart disease, and to the increased risk for venous thromboembolism seen during the first year of treatment in observational studies. This pattern might be explained by a selective effect of hormone therapy on a specific group of women at risk for thrombosis, such as those with hypercoagulable states. However, a similar time-dependent decrease in relative hazard for deep venous thrombosis was not seen. Because pulmonary embolism is generally the result of embolization from clots in the deep veins of the legs, this apparent difference in the time dependence of the effect of hormone therapy on pulmonary embolism and deep venous thrombosis probably represents a chance finding. To determine how long the risk for venous thrombosis remains elevated after hormone therapy is stopped, we performed analyses focusing on events that occurred at 1 week, 1 month, and 3 months after discontinuation of therapy. The relative hazard for venous thrombosis seemed to remain elevated for at least the first 30 days after discontinuation of study medication, but the number of events was too small to allow us to draw firm conclusions. Examination of risk factors for venous thromboembolism revealed several interesting findings. Risk factors that have been identified in previous observational studies, such as age, smoking, obesity, and hypertension, were not significantly associated with venous thromboembolism. After adjustment for events that occurred during follow-up, fractures, cancer, surgery, and hospitalization. But the number of venous thromboembolic events in the trial was small and may have limited power to detect risk factors. Older age at menopause was strongly associated with increased risk for venous thromboembolism. We examined many potential predictors, and this finding might be due to chance. If it is real, the mechanism of this association is unclear. Women who undergo menopause at a later age may have higher levels of endogenous estrogen production or other hormonal differences that put them at increased risk. Hip fracture increased risk for venous thromboembolism sixfold, but other lower extremity fractures increased this risk 18-fold. This difference persisted even after adjustment for use of warfarin. The higher relative hazard associated with lower extremity fracture compared with hip fracture might be the result of chance, given the small number of venous thromboembolic events, or of the fact that early ambulation, compression devices, and physical therapy are emphasized after hip fracture but not after lower extremity fractures. The rate of venous thromboembolism in the first 3 months after lower extremity fracture was 23 per 100 women, suggesting that mobilization and compression devices should be encouraged after fracture and that routine anticoagulation, as instituted after hip fracture, might be of benefit. Risk for venous thromboembolism was increased fivefold during the first 90 days after myocardial infarction, even after adjustment for hospitalization. The reason for this increased risk is unclear. Women who have myocardial infarction may be less mobile or active for a few months after the event or may experience some persistent hypercoagulable state. The rate of venous thrombosis in the first 90 days after myocardial infarction was 10 per 100 women, even though about 80% of the participants were taking aspirin daily. This high rate of venous thromboembolism after infarction suggests that more attention should be given to mobilization after infarction and that anticoagulation should perhaps be considered, particularly in women who are otherwise at risk. We found reduced risk for venous thromboembolism among women taking statins, but not other lipid-lowering drugs. Treatment with statins seems to decrease risk for coronary events more than would be expected on the basis of the resulting improvement in lipoprotein levels. Some of this beneficial effect may be due to decreased coronary arterial thrombus formation mediated by inhibitory actions on platelet deposition and aggregation, or favorable effects on coagulation factors, rheology, and fibrinolysis. Some of this beneficial effect may be due to decreased coronary arterial thrombus formation mediated by inhibitory actions on platelet deposition and aggregation, or favorable effects on coagulation factors, rheology, and fibrinolysis. These mechanisms may also decrease the risk for venous thromboembolism. To our knowledge, previous trials of lipid-lowering drugs have not reported an effect on risk for venous thromboembolism. Treatment with aspirin, which was also associated with lower risk for venous thromboembolism in our study, is known to reduce the risk for arterial thromboembolism, including myocardial infarction and stroke, particularly in persons at high risk, such as those with chronic atrial fibrillation. To our knowledge, no other study has evaluated the effect of long-term aspirin therapy on the risk for venous thromboembolism in women with established coronary disease. The absolute risk for venous thromboembolic events among women in the placebo group in HERS was 2.3 per 1,000 woman years. This rate is substantially higher than that observed among younger women, but is similar to rates in other populations of elderly women. Among women in HERS, treating 256 women for 1 year would be expected to result in one additional episode of venous thrombosis. This number needed to treat for harm is likely to be similar in other populations of elderly women. However, the number needed to treat for harm among young women is likely to be substantially higher given the lower absolute risk for venous thrombosis. The excess risk for venous thrombosis, 4 events per 1,000 women in HERS, would be acceptable if hormone therapy provides other benefits that outweigh this risk. Clinicians should consider increased risk for venous thromboembolism when counseling women about the risks and benefits of postmenopausal hormone therapy. And women at very high risk because of history of venous thromboembolism, cancer, lower extremity fracture, or immobilization should avoid postmenopausal hormone therapy.
It's T-shirt time.
T-shirt time.
It's T-shirt time.
Everybody knows it's T-shirt time.
So annoying.
T-shirt time.
It's T-shirt time.
Oh my God! Shut up now.
Shirtless robots, listen to CITR 101.9 FM.
I'm just trying to let everybody know so they put their T-shirts on.